from New Orleans. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. Singer-songwriter Spencer Boren gave his final public performance at this year's New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival. By then, most of his fans knew that he was fighting cancer with a combination of radiation, diet, music, and conversation. When we spoke a few weeks later, Spencer Boren talked about his unpredictable, unforgettable life.
It's way beyond music, what I bring to the table. And I do it unconsciously. Right now, I'm going through a pretty rough patch health-wise, and we are getting responses from people all over the world about how my simple music has been part of their life in a big way.
In June, Spencer Boren died at the age of 69. Tune into his stories about Hank Williams, classic cars, Batman, and yes, Jesus, after the break. Literature is filled with stories of traveling musicians who minister to the souls of strangers. Some are poets and some are preachers, and some deliver the news of the day. But the traveling musician offers the listener an important perspective on life as a movable feast. Some hop trains or hire tour buses, or in ancient Greece, rode the back of a dolphin. Spencer Boren has had a career worthy of literature, but it's been all too true. For more than 50 years, he's been a roving troubadour, writing, performing, and teaching the blues, gospel, and American roots music. For much of that time, he's been traveling overseas and touring this country in a variety of vehicles, including a 1955 Chevrolet. Mr. Boren was raised in Casper, Wyoming, but his home is here in New Orleans. He's produced nearly 20 albums of original songs and American standards like this one.
Ring them bells, St. Peter, where the four winds blow. Ring them bells with an iron hand so the people will know. For it's rush hour now on the wheel and the plow, and the sun is going down upon the sacred cow.
Spencer Boren joins us at Marini Studios. Welcome, and thanks so much for taking the time.
I'm so pleased to be here, Gwen. Thank you for the invitation.
So the song that we've been listening to it's a Bob Dylan song.
A Bob Dylan song written in New Orleans and recorded on a record called Oh Mercy by Daniel Lanois. The song is just a glorious piece of literature, like you say. It took me forever to learn the words, but I wanted those words in my heart. For the shepherd is asleep where the willows weep, and the mountains are filled with lost sheep. It just destroys me. I love this song.
Ring them bells for the blind and the deaf. Ring them bells for those of us who are left. Ring them bells for the chosen few who would judge the many when the game is through. Ring them bells for the time that flies, for the child that cries when her innocence dies.
But also, I play the lap steel guitar, and I play it solo. I don't do it like anybody else does it. And that song just knocks me out on the steel. Steel is just the epitome of space.
This is sort of a beautiful instrument that one holds in one's lap, and that is a fretless stringed instrument.
And it's been obsolete for 40 years.
Oh, so what does obsolete mean?
Well, they're hard to find. They're starting to make them again, but no one plays them as a solo accompaniment instrument. That's what's unusual.
And so when you cast your mind back, though, to those early years in Casper, Wyoming, which my understanding is that it's in the Rockies and the Rocky Mountains?
It's right on the edge of the Great Plains and the Rocky Mountains. It's right where it all starts to happen.
Oh, my goodness. And so, you know, what were your earliest memories of this place?
Wyoming is the fourth largest state in America, and it has the fewest people. There's less than 500,000 people in the whole state.
Mm.
So there ain't nobody there. But there are petroglyphs from Indians or aliens, I'm not sure. There are, you know, vast tracts of sweet-smelling sagebrush with enormous numbers of antelope, way more antelope than people.
Mm.
And of course, there's Yellowstone Park and all the geothermal. The earth is not finished up there yet.
Yes.
The people are conservative, and I don't mean that in a bad way. They do for themselves. And I'm the same way. I mean, I was raised, you know, kind of the cowboy way. If it's got to be done, it's got to be done. The town nearest Casper to the west is 98 miles away. If you go 30 miles north of there, you go through the most beautiful canyon you've ever seen, and you emerge at Thermopolis, which is the world's largest hot springs, waterfalls of hot water. It's a glorious place.
It sounds like a glorious
place. But it's lonely out there. You know, there ain't nobody there. Buffalo, it's a trip.
Well, who was in your house with you?
Well, we did have a lot of religious people in my house.
Really?
Oh, boy. What was good about it was the fact that we were all singers. My mother insisted that we sing in the car, so we didn't bicker. There were five kids. And, we didn't sing about anything but Jesus. That's all there was to sing about. And I'll never forget coming down 15th Street Hill on the way to the Calvary Baptist Church and singing the third above the melody for the first time.
Really?
And I never, ever wanted to sing the melody again. I was so excited by harmony. And it's ironic that I ended up being a soloist because I can sing harmony and I love doing it.
Lord, I'm one. Lord, I'm two. Lord, I'm three. Lord, I'm four. Lord, I'm 500 miles away from home.
I don't know how you do it.
I don't either. I just
do it.
You've
got great ears.
Well, I'm sure that's true.
And so did your mother have a beautiful voice?
Yes, she still does.
Yeah?
She's 92, and the last time I was able to travel out to Wyoming, I sang with her every day.
Really?
And,
she must have loved that.
It's just glorious. And
yeah.
It takes her a while to get going, and then we'll sing, you know, about Jesus. And then in the middle of it all, she'll start singing harmony instead of the melody, and I'll sing the melody for her, and then at the end I'll trick her and I'll sing "Hey, Good Looking," because we weren't allowed to do that at home, but I know she knows it because she wasn't always so
and
religious.
Does she always go along
when you sing with her for a while? She sings harmony. It's fun.
Exactly. And who can rebuke Hank Williams? Come on.
No,
you
exactly
know?
I got a hot rod Ford and a $2 bill, and I know a spot right over the hill. There's soda pop and the dancing spree. So if you want to have fun, come along with me. Say, hey, good looking, what you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me?
What did your dad do?
My dad was a superintendent for a millionaire who had all of the office buildings that had the oil companies in them. He had seven buildings, and my dad could fix anything.
Wow.
Anything. He could take a car apart and put it back together, and it would run. He could do anything. And so he was hired by Mr. Goodstein. I love that name.
Yes.
Mr. Goodstein hired my dad, and he kept his buildings going and made a good living for our family.
And so when you cast your mind back to those years, you know, is there any particular song that comes to your mind? Like if you were to hear it today, you would think, oh, man, that reminds me of my time in Casper, Wyoming.
Yes. Big Bad John. I could do it right now, I'm sure. Every morning at the mine, you could see him arrive. He's stood 6'6",
weighed 245, kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hip. And everybody knew you didn't give no lip to Big John.
Big John. Big John.
Big Bad John.
And that was kind of an introduction to the fact that all songs weren't about Jesus. Then you start digging in the roots of American folk music, and you got hangings and murder and adultery and all kinds of wild stuff.
Wow.
And yet it was benign because it was just America's music. We're just telling our story.
Exactly. It's just storytelling.
I love folk music.
And so before we get you out of Casper.
Yeah, we better get out of Casper. There's a lot of miles to cover.
A lot of miles, yes, it's that. But before, you know, when you were there, at what point did you pick up an instrument?
So I started playing guitar at 14. I was in a group called the Dean Morgan Junior High School Folk Singers. It was ensemble.
Sexy.
Yeah, really, really great name. And I went to Mr. Valete. I went to him one day and I said, Mr. Valete, I want to start a surf group.
Oh, boy, in the middle of Wyoming.
Well, the Beach Boys were awfully cool to listen to. And I was kind of a motorhead, you know. So he said, well, that's a great idea. Before we start, though, I want you to take this Smithsonian collection of American folk music. It was six LPs.
Yes.
He said, I want you to listen to them twice, and then I want you to come back and we'll talk. And by the time I'd listened to them twice, I was listening to them endlessly. And he gave me a life that I have really loved. I could never, ever thank him enough.
And so you play by ear. You played by ear since the time that you,
yes.
since you were 14.
I know nothing about music. But now that I'm thinking about it, this is probably pretty funny. When I was 14 and I had just been learning to play, I entered the Stars of Tomorrow. It was a Kiwanis Club talent show. And I won.
Did you?
Singing Blowing in the Wind and a song I wrote and Greenback Dollar. I think I won $50, which that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I got to appear at the Wyoming State Fair. And backstage are the Ink Spots.
No way.
Yes way.
Wow.
And so I went out and I did my show, my three songs. And I came back in and the skinny bass player or bass singer, I walked back and he slaps me on the back and he says, man, you sure know how to sell a song. It just validated me. So I haven't thought of that for a long time.
Wait, and what did you sing again? Blowing in the Wind?
Blowing in the Wind, Greenback Dollar, and a song I wrote called Withered Old Man.
Of which you knew so much.
I knew so much.
What, 15?
Now I am a withered old man. Yeah, 15. But, you know, it was just so liberating to be able to sing about life instead of, you know, salvation and sin. And
right. How did this go down with your folks who, you know, who heard you playing, you know, your instrument to songs that were not about Jesus?
My father was convinced that it was the road to ruin and, you know, I was the devil's plaything. And it's so unfortunate that the religion thing really put a wedge between all of us because they couldn't allow me to just be myself. And I knew who I was supposed to be. I knew it from the beginning. And my mother has even told me, she said, you know, I wish now that I had cared more about what you were thinking than what the neighbors were thinking.
Wow.
And that's deep.
That's very deep and very important for you to hear.
And I appreciate that from her, but you know, I can barely talk to my sisters. They're married to preachers who, you know, don't believe in fossils, for God's sake. You know?
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't want to go down that road.
I see what you're saying. And when did you pull out of Casper?
The hour I graduated.
From high school.
I gave my dad the diploma, said, you want it, you got it. I have a ticket to Denver, and I went there. Because in Denver, they had the Folklore Center, and there were these guys, this was before hippies, so they're like beatniks hanging around there playing guitars and banjos, and they were doing really adventurous things like wearing shoes with no socks and things like that. And I walked in there, and I saw my tribe.
I take each corner with a smile.
Spencer Boren with the title song of his 2018 album, Making It Home to You. Coming up, another thing that Dr. John did. Stay with us. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. Singer-songwriter Spencer Boren and Mac Rebinac, a.k.a. Dr. John, were memorialized this year on the same summer weekend in New Orleans. But that's not all they have in common. Think Colorado. Mr. Boren made many of his most important connections there. Ever been to a hootenanny?
And so you would go to the Denver Folklore Center on Friday nights. They'd have a hoot. I started singing with a guy who could really play and who really turned me on to so much stuff. Mm. And the most important thing he did was that my wife, Marilyn, my wife of, I don't know, 40 several years, and he was her boyfriend.
Ah.
So he in the end, he really wasn't my best friend anymore. But I've got the most fantastic woman in the entire planet.
That sounds like a such a night kind of situation,
exactly,
right? That's a Dr. John.
And I am.
Somebody
else will.
That's right. If I don't do it, somebody else
will. She was ready to go.
Will.
He wasn't nice to her. He didn't deserve her.
All right.
But he turned me on to so many artists, like Charlie Patton, who is often considered the father of the blues.
Charlie Patton?
No, he's been dead since he died. But he introduced me to Charlie Patton's music.
Gotcha. I was about to say, whoa, I'm asking you the wrong question.
That's right. Whoa, are we ever. Anyway, he introduced me to the broader story.
Yes.
And he played really well.
You know, and so at what point did you begin recording as a solo artist?
At this point, I was such a hippie, and I was very psychedelicized. I loved that.
I like that verb, psychedelicized.
I'll use it three times so we can put it in the dictionary. I had convinced myself that records didn't matter. It didn't matter whether you're recording, because it really happens, you know, at the gig.
At the gig, yes.
And so I was very late to record. And when I finally did, it was 1983, I think, I recorded. And I made a record called Born in a Biscayne.
Yes.
With Dr. John playing piano.
Yes.
John Mooney produced it. And suddenly, my music could be heard all over the world.
What's a Biscayne?
That's a Chevrolet manufactured in 1958.
I was born in a black Biscayne Chevrolet. I was born in a two-door Biscayne Chevrolet. I was born in a 54 Biscayne Chevrolet. I was born in a black two-door 54 Biscayne. Black two-door 54 Biscayne.
And I had a guy in Detroit come up to me, and he slammed his beer on the bar. He worked at General Motors, and he said, "We didn't make no Biscaynes in 54. So I said, "I know that, but it didn't rhyme. I'm a poet."
Born in a Biscayne. I was born in a Biscayne.
That record made me realize that I had misjudged the everything happens at the gig, because it didn't take too long before some young French couple got a hold of me, and they started some real fireworks in France.
Exactly.
Billboards. I was totally famous for a little while. I'm not sure what happened, but but it was kind of amazing to get off the airplane and see me on a billboard. It was
Wow.
I had record deals on Sony and Virgin. That would never have happened here. Not that I made one dime.
Oh, no.
You don't. Now, if you're working with the labels, you don't.
Mm. Well, but that's crazy. Well, I'll tell you, I mean, it's interesting, you know, I was born in a Biscayne because, you know, you're doing shopping for clothes.
Oh, and that's with Dr. John doing the salesperson, the coaster song. That is, it's a riot.
Well, I went shopping for a suit the other day, walked in the department store. I stepped on an elevator and told a girl dry goods flow. Now, when I got off, a man walked up. He said,
"What can I do for you?"
I said, "Show me all them sports clothes like you supposed to." He said,
"Sure, man. Come on in. Dig these fabrics laying on the shelf.
pick-eyed woman, try it on. Stand in a mirror and dig yourself. That suit is pure herringbone.
Yeah, that's a suit I like to own.
Kind of a narrative in your recording history is that you always have that interesting mix of sort of classic sort of American songs and then your own original material.
I guess you're right. I do tend to have that mix. I know some writers who say, I would never do anything that I didn't write. And I'm like, oh, how sad. There's so many wonderful songs.
There really are.
And that can be done with humor, that can be done with seriousness, that can be done with poetry, that can be done any which way.
This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. We're talking with Spencer Boren, a wonderful singer-songwriter who has flitted this entire world and calls New Orleans home. As the story goes, you know, you were in Colorado and Dr. John, Mac Rebenack, you had a conversation with him and that conversation convinced you to come down here. Now, a lot of people have had conversations with Mac Rebenack and he has not steered them in directions that they fondly
That's a
recall,
fact.
Right?
That's a fact.
So, you know what I mean? So what was it about his argument that seemed persuasive to you?
I met Dr. John in like 73 or 4. I was in a band in Boulder, Colorado, and Dr. John was coming to play a gig, but not just a gig. I think he was there for 3 or 4 days, maybe even longer, because he had this big band, and he had just made a record called Desertively Bonnaroo.
Oh, yes.
And he needed a place to rehearse the band. And so he took this gig for a week or for so many days, whatever.
A little record, take a room, dum thing. It's a record, take a room, dum game.
And so I opened the show every night with my little trio. And at one point he did a radio interview and he was talking about Professor Longhair. And we were just fascinated with it. So when we came to New Orleans, we found a flyer on the ground that said, Professor Longhair, the real king of Mardi Gras, at
really?
The 501 Club, which turned into Tipitina's.
Exactly.
And so that was one of our first experiences, is Mardi Gras with Professor Longhair and learning that all gigs don't start at 9 o'clock like they do in Colorado. At 5 to midnight, the back door opened. The band assembled and was playing within 10 minutes.
Wow.
And the room was instantly packed with policemen dancing with big fine gals, their mace and guns bouncing on them, drinking, policemen drinking in uniform. It was just magnificent. It was incredible night. Just seduced the socks off of us, and we knew that we were going to move here. And
so
when we did, we were pregnant, so we started our family in New Orleans.
So it was not only Mac Rebenack, but it was Mac Rebenack and Professor Longhair. That's what
and,
convinced
and the band,
you.
The Jerry Jumonville, he was very friendly. We're in the backstage quite a bit, and Mac was nowhere to be seen because he was. Occupied. But
so he was sort of in the throes of being a night tripper, right?
Absolutely.
That was his
persona. That was definitely his night tripper phase. And his show was a Mardi Gras show. We thought it was a psychedelic show. He had glitter cannons and they all had costumes and plumes and feathers.
Yes.
And this giant, I think it was an 11-piece band. I'd never heard people who could play like that.
You know, New Orleans is a place that likes spectacle. You know, we all want to be a spectacle.
I know.
But then that you sing with in a voice almost without adornment.
I think simplicity counts.
Yeah, you are a straight shooter when
but
you sing.
But so is Ray Charles. If you listen to Ray Charles sing, it's embellished, yes, but the melody is always shines through. He sings conversationally, which is
yes.
important to me. If you don't phrase the song right, it's just words.
Mm-hmm.
If you phrase it right, it's a conversation.
That's really insightful.
It's important to me to reach into people's hearts, because as I've done this all these years, I realize that it's way beyond music, what I bring to the table. And I do it unconsciously. But right now, I'm going through a pretty rough patch health-wise, and we are getting responses from people all over the world about how my simple music has been part of their life in a big way. It's an honor to find that out. Well, I'm just talking to them.
And hey, daddy's lonesome for you. Hey, your daddy's lonesome for you. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll make sweet, sweet love to you. Daddy's feeling blue.
I have been to Europe probably 130 or 140 times.
Yeah.
And Japan and other places too. But it's been such an amazing thing to be able to go over there on their dollar and find that the simplicity communicates.
Hey, your daddy's feeling blue.
Hey Daddy Blues, from his 2008 album, Live at the Tube Temple, recorded in Germany. Mr. Boren died of cancer shortly after this interview, at the age of 69. Coming up, gladiolas and other signs of the goodness of humankind. Stay with us.
All right.
I'm Gwen Tompkins, and Music Inside Out. Here's Spencer Boren with a song called Travelin'.
Oklahoma, Texas, Alabama too. If I spend my whole life trying, maybe I'll run into you.
And so, Spencer Boren, let me ask you about these 7 years from 1983 until 1990 that you and your family took to the road. What was the point? What were you heading out to go and see or experience?
The point was to be a family. That's the whole point. And in retrospect, I cannot believe we did what we did. We didn't have a house for 7 years. Marilyn learned a whole new set of skills. She booked tours. And the kids weren't bound by school. And they had stuff to do every day in the car, because we were in the car almost every day. And I became a pretty good mechanic. I mean, definitely not a professional mechanic, but I could keep that car going. I could rebuild that engine on the side of the road with a flashlight in my mouth if I had to.
Wow. Maybe you learned something from your dad, superintendent.
I'm sure
who
I have a certain knack for that. Don't tell anybody, please. But I just want to be an artist.
Oh, you know? Of course. But okay, so it's a 55 Chevy, but what's the model?
Bel Air.
Oh,
that's full
Bel Air.
Chrome.
Full chrome.
Full chrome. I feel at home surrounded by chrome. When we were on the road with that Chevy, and we had you got a picture, it's a red and white and chrome 55 Chevrolet, the epitome of the 1950s Chevy, and an Airstream silver bullet-looking trailer behind it. It was gloriously beautiful. The thing is, we didn't just show up at the gig. We arrived.
So the whole family would go to the gig then?
Sometimes. They wouldn't go to the gig, but they'd be parked outside. They'd be eating, and Andre was drawing and playing music, and Django was building Lego blocks, and Karina was She was a princess. She was always dressed in velvet or lace or something. And now she's the costume director at the Minnesota Opera.
Oh, my goodness. And so are you making a tour to the same places, essentially, year after year?
When possible, you repeat the gigs, because that's how you build an audience in the town.
Writing down another tune, yet another dressing room, cut another piece of cake. I'm looking for a big break. Disappearing nightly, disappearing nightly, I'm disappearing nightly.
And so, and when you're staying, you're staying on campgrounds mostly, or are you staying with people, with friends?
It's a variety. Or? As often as we could, we would not stay with anybody. We wouldn't stay in a campground. There were places all over America where you can just pull off to the side of the road. But often, there were many people who would never have forgiven us if we hadn't stayed with them, which was a gift, for sure.
Right, exactly.
Campgrounds when we had to.
And so is it sleeping under the stars?
No, no. An Airstream trailer has cedar closets, my dear.
Of course it does. Of
These course. Are not just trailers. These are... These are, you know, rolling Ramadas.
Oh, my word.
And if it was possible to sleep outside, we would. The idea was to be barefoot as much as possible for the kids, because Marilyn was booking. She booked Florida every winter. And then as the spring started happening, we'd follow the spring north. But that car was already an old car.
Well, sure, by 55, it was already almost 30 years old.
Yeah, it was 30 years old.
Yeah.
And there were five engines that we put in it, because I didn't realize how hard we were pushing that thing, pulling that huge trailer.
Right.
But like one night we got to, we had a gig. I booked the gig. I had a contract. We always had contracts, which was more professional than most people were that were out there. And, I called the club. We got to Iowa City, and I called the club, and I said, hey, this is Spencer Bourne. I'm playing there at Gabe's tonight. And the guy said, well, no, you're not playing at Gabe's tonight, because Gabe's is shut down for renovation. He said, there's nobody playing at Gabe's tonight.
Oh, my.
And I said, listen, man, I booked this. I have a contract. You owe me $150.
Yeah.
So we don't know anything about this. And I explained that I had my family on the road. We needed that gig. We had no money. And we ran out of money regularly. So he said, you know what? The bar downstairs is open. It's not really a venue, but we'll do it. We'll have to pass the hat. We can't do it any other way. So we passed the hat. I played the gig. The bartender... loved my music. For some reason, he just loved it. I was ready to leave. I had the PA packed into the car, and he said, I want you to have some of the food from my garden. He said, it's going to take me a half hour to get out there and back, but he said, please wait. And he came back with bags and boxes full of vegetables, fruits, all the cornucopia of Iowa gardens.
Amazing.
And a huge batch of, I think, gladiolas for Marilyn. And, I mean, we definitely sang for our supper that night. We got paid in groceries. It was a great experience.
Yeah, I love that. And I love the idea of people who want to put something in your hands.
Yes.
You know, and that's, you know, I mean, and that's something that, you know what I mean, that's really precious. And when it happens to you, you just feel like the luckiest person in the world.
And this happened a lot.
What got you off the road?
Well, I guess it was time to stop, because we were on the road in the Redwood Forest, and I looked in the mirror and I saw Django reading a comic. And I said, Django, damn it, we are in the Redwood Forest. It's primeval forest. It exists nowhere else in the world. I want you to put the comic book down and look out the window. And he looks at me through the mirror and he says, Dad, I've seen the Redwood Forest 5 times. This is a brand new Batman.
So the got a point.
I think it was time. Plus, he was kind of curious about what school might be like. And Andre had to learn. Andre had to have the opportunity to open up this magnificent piano gift that he has. He plays classical music like I play Hank Williams songs. Mm.
And so you decided to go back to Wyoming?
Originally went back to, we had left New Orleans from living next door to the Sub Dudes or John Magny out on Hayne Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
And we serendipitously ended up living next door to the Magnys again in Fort Collins, Colorado.
Oh, so you went to Colorado.
Yeah, we did. And we could buy the house that we were staying in for a good price. And we went to the bank, and the banker looked at me and he said, Mr. Boren, we don't loan money to people who don't have a job and who have never had a job.
Wait a minute.
Musicians can't get money anywhere but here.
And so this was in Colorado that the banker told you that?
And we heard them snickering as we walked out. It hurt. And I said, it's too bad Casper's such an awful place because we could find a cheaper house in Wyoming. And Marilyn said, I think Casper is a beautiful town. And I said, it is? And so I called my brother and said, you know, we're just thinking about moving to Wyoming. If there's a house, I said, would you send us the newspaper and we'll look? And he called about 15 minutes later and he said, you know, I just drove by a house with a man tapping the for sale sign. He said, it's a beautiful house. We could afford it because it was cheap. But we couldn't afford to furnish it. But that was a great juncture because I was able to get back with my family.
Yes.
They needed to know me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that happened there. And I was able to get sober in Wyoming where I probably couldn't have pulled that off here.
Yeah, that would have been a challenge.
You know what I mean?
Uphill against the wind. Done it before and we can do it again. Keep your chin up and your head down. Keep your nose to the grindstone. Keep your ear to the ground. It's gonna take a miracle, but there's gotta be a way.
So how long were you in Wyoming?
Only 5 years.
You were there for 5 years. And the children, how old did the youngest child get at the end of those 5 years?
That would be Tucker. We moved to New Orleans. Tucker was probably 7 or 8.
And so,
Django had already left the fold.
He was the oldest boy.
He was the oldest.
And so, okay, so then you had 3 children with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so what prompted the move back? Did you stabilize financially or something and come back?
Oh, no. I don't know that will ever happen. And the Sub Dudes were breaking up. Thank God that wasn't real. But they were breaking up and they paid for a ticket for her to come down.
Okay.
And we were sitting in Jackson Square and it was November. It was probably 80 degrees. It was just magnificent.
What year?
This would have been 96 or 97.
Mm-hmm.
And in Wyoming, it was with the wind chill about 20 below zero. Your ears could freeze off. And we had just left that. And we hear a trombone start playing. And then we hear a saxophone playing off by the Cabildo. And then we hear this incredible tuba. And I said, wow, we got to go over and see who this is. And we walk over and we know half these guys. Mm. They're the Nightcrawlers.
Oh, my goodness.
And they are so good. we simultaneously just said, we're moving back, aren't we? And we went back to Wyoming and sold the house for twice what we bought it for, enabled us to buy a house in New Orleans, which has really been a gift.
Exactly, exactly. And so once you got back here, you know, I mean, what came out of you then in terms of music, in terms of recording? What did you
want
to say?
We got back here and I hit, you know, I went to Europe. That's what I was doing in those days. I was going to Europe several times a year. And I came back. But what was nice was that so many of the musician friends were still here. And in New Orleans is not like other places. Other places, musicians rarely really want to hang out with each other. They're competitive. They are jealous of each other's gigs. They won't share information. But in New Orleans, if I do something that is notable and people like it, everybody's like, yeah, man, great.
Right.
If one of us does better, all of us do better. And it was so comforting to be back in a scene like that where I wasn't so weird. Your father sings for a living? It's like, where do you do that? And and Karina would get irate and she'd say, well, Paris, Stockholm, Tokyo. And they'd go, well, what kind of a living can you make singing? And she's 12. And friend called and said, you would have been proud of her. She put this big real estate guy in his place. She said, well, I've noticed that some people spend their life making a living. And some people spend their life making a life. And my daddy has a great life.
Wow.
Off.
Drop the mic.
That's right. The kids are deep.
Yeah, the
they're
kids
deep.
Are
they
deep.
Get it. They lived like artists.
Yeah.
And they're good at it. They can walk the wire as well as anybody.
So hold me if you want me. Love me as you will. I surrender all control. And I'm yours until the stars fall from heaven, and I know they never will. I am lost forever in your kiss.
And so what music poured out of you after that?
There have been a lot of good records come since we've been in New Orleans. I think my songwriting has gotten a lot more casual. Like I don't work at it.
Interesting.
I used to not work at it hard enough. I have made records, I won't say which, that I can tell that I should have smoked a little less pot and spent a little more time editing. But what's done is done.
What's done is done.
But I've gotten a lot more casual about songwriting, which I'm working with the Wright brothers, who are three great songwriters. And
right, that's Jim McCormick and Alex McMurray.
And Paul Sanchez.
Yes.
And so I have really enjoyed that because these guys, I mean, I think of them as serious songwriters. I think they probably think of me the same way, but
sure.
I've never thought of myself that way.
I actually talked with Reggie Scanlon recently, you know, the bassist for
Radiators.
Yeah,
I know him very well.
And he told me, you know, he goes, one of my desert island discs, right, if I'm ever lost on an island somewhere, you know what I mean, is an album that's called Carry the Word.
Reggie said that?
He certainly did say that. He goes, you need to get that album. And I said, I've already ordered that album. He goes, well, if you don't like it, I'll buy it from you. Is that right?
Reggie,
you believe it?
Bless your heart,
I'll
Reggie.
Give you your money back if you don't like this album because this is a great album, right? And he's right because, I mean, I've heard the album and I just think it's marvelous. Absolutely marvelous, you know?
Wow.
And so, of course, I am, you know, I'm going to ask you if you would be willing to sing it. Anything from it, and I do mean anything.
I will certainly do that. Oh, come on. This guitar was a gift from my students at the New Orleans workshop I do every year. Okay, I'm going to just do it. We all have wings like the wings of an angel. We all have wings, but we can't all fly. So many chains holding us down. Unfold your wings and reach for the sky. It's okay. It's not perfect. Might be better than
that
perfect.
That is fantastic. That is a wonderful song. You wrote this song.
I did write that song.
Had you ever thought that you could write a hymn?
That language is very deeply familiar to me. So I suppose so. If you can write a blues song, you can write a hymn. It's just different.
Well, the specifics are different.
but I'm not sure why I like that image of we all have wings, but we don't all fly. But I really believe that.
Yeah.
You gotta jump off the cliff or you can't fly. You know?
Singer-songwriter Spencer Boren. Mr. Boren died shortly after our interview at the age of 69. His family and friends held two memorials for him, one in New Orleans and the other in Casper, Wyoming. He's known there as a Wyoming treasure. And you've been listening to Music Inside Out. Our show is produced by Lynette Johnson, Lars Howell, Andrew Wimmer, and Justin Armstrong. Music Inside Out is produced in partnership with WWNO. For more information about Spencer Bourne, including a playlist of the songs in this program, please go to our website at musicinsideout.org. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out.
Major support for Music Inside Out comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection. Music Inside Out also receives support from the Ruth U. Fertel Foundation, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, the Pinkalope Foundation, Baba Jim Istanbul Studios and Mastering, Adam Newman Designs, Shop Nadine Blake, and WWNO. Donations to Music Inside Out are tax deductible, thanks to our partnership with National Performance Network. For more information about how you can support our program, please go to our website at musicinsideout.org/support.